I look back on the 8 years we've been talking, and it seems
it's
like every
gotten
year.
Worse.
Yeah.
It's incredible. We were talking about this same thing 8 years ago.
Right.
And it's just gotten worse. And it's like, wait a minute.
Ladies and gentlemen, we know.
What's their track record for being in control of the planet? It's not very good. Two world wars, huge depressions, you know, and lots of suffering, lots of death of the humans. Okay, so it's enough that I think that once you study this subject in all seriousness, it's time to ask, are they even us? They want us dead. And so I'm telling people, you better start paying attention to all this New World Order talk, because this is not just a philosophical debate. This is self-defense.
Right.
You better know what these people are up to and start taking steps to protect yourself and your family. And speaking of, they keep saying guns kill, guns kill. You know, I had a shotgun, and I loaded it up and set it over in the corner, and it's been there for a long time. It hadn't killed anybody. So it's just, I guess it's falling down on the job.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio, with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com with the season premiere of BOA Audio Season 8. Welcome to what I am sure is going to be an unforgettable series of paranormal and parapolitical conversations, which you're going to be hearing here on our 8th season of programming. For those folks who are wondering what BOA Audio Season 8 will entail, stay tuned to the end of the program where I will share the details of BOA Audio Season 8 and what will make it different from any previous season of the program. But first, it's time to kick off the season as we do every year with our traditional season premiere guest, the legendary Jim Mars, who joins us for a discussion on his new book, Our Occulted History, which asks the question, do the global elite conceal ancient aliens? Over the course of this conversation, we are going to discuss how academia and the mainstream media cover up anomalous astronomical and archaeological discoveries. We'll talk about how history's winners have consistently destroyed information about humanity's past, as well as why the powers that be kept the knowledge of North America hidden from the population for centuries. We'll also delve into the Sumerian creation epic, the modern UFO phenomenon, the pros and cons of the internet and cell phones, overpopulation myths, mass shootings, the potential for a military coup in the United States, the Ross Perot saga, and the JFK assassination, plus, of course, tons and tons more. Overlooking what will likely be one of the most unique and enlightening seasons of BOA Audio in our storied history, we begin the journey by returning to where it all began, with the iconic Jim Mars. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Jim Mars, please allow me to take a moment and provide you with some background on him. After graduating with a degree in journalism from the University of North Texas, he served in the U.S. Army, after which he became a reporter for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Jim worked for and owned several Texas newspapers before becoming an independent journalist/author. His in-depth investigative book, Alien Agenda, has been cited as the best-selling nonfiction book on UFOs in the world, having been translated into several languages. He is also the author of the New York Times bestsellers Crossfire, The Plot That Killed Kennedy, a basis for the Oliver Stone film JFK, and Rule by Secrecy, the hidden history that connects the Trilateral Commission, the Freemasons, and the Great Pyramids. He's also the author of Psi Spies, The Terror Conspiracy, Rise of the Fourth Reich, and The Trillion Dollar Conspiracy. His latest book is titled Our Occulted History. His website is www.jimmars.com. Pretty simple, all one word, jimmars.com. Check it out. And with all that said, let's get down to business and rock and roll. This interview was recorded on September 26, 2013, Jim Mars, on the season premiere of BOA Audio Season 8. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the season premiere of BOA Audio Season 8. It is unbelievable at times to imagine that we are about to kick off our 8th year of programming here on Banal of America Audio, and as is tradition here on the show, we begin each season with the legendary investigative reporter Jim Mars, who, as I've told the story a million times, so I feel like I need to tell it every year to kick off the show. If I hadn't discovered Rule by Secrecy, you know, I never would have started this journey, and it began back in 2002, so 11 years on, it all began with my discovery of Rule by Secrecy, and I absolutely love that book. I love all of his books. I've read them all, of course. He is the author of Crossfire, Rule by Secrecy, Alien Agenda, Psi Spies, Inside Job, Above Top Secret, Rise of the Fourth Reich, The Trillion Dollar Conspiracy, and the fiction book Sisterhood of the Rose. And here in Season 8, we're going to be talking about his new book, Our Occulted History, which is absolutely fantastic, folks. I cannot put this book over enough. It really made me nostalgic almost. I felt like I was back in 2002 when I first discovered Rule by Secrecy and Alien Agenda. It feels almost like a spiritual successor to those two books. Sort of bridges the gap between those two, and it is really just tremendously well researched and just sucks you in and just keeps you reading throughout the entire book. So I absolutely loved it. It is Our Occulted History, and we're back here with Jim Mars to talk about it on the program. Welcome back to the show, Jim. Thanks for helping us kick off our 8th year of programming here on BOA Audio.
Isn't it amazing how time flies when you're having fun?
It really is.
And learning things. Let me explain that when I use the term occulted, I use it, this book is not about devil worship or zombies or anything that we might think of as the occult. I use the term occulted in the astronomical sense. When the moon eclipses the sun, it's called an occultation. It occults the sun. So it actually only means, occult only means hidden or mask. So we're talking about our hidden history. That's what it is. And Tim, I think since you've read the book, you know that it starts with the Big Bang Theory and then comes all the way up through ancient astronauts and all the way up. And what I've really done here is, well, my starting hypothesis was, do the current New World Order, the 1%, the Illuminati, whatever you want to call them,
right,
that obviously control the large corporations and the large multinational banks, can they be tracked all the way back through their secret societies and through bloodlines to another popular topic, which is ancient astronauts? And the answer is yes, as you can see from the material that I presented in our occulted history.
Absolutely, yeah. It was just fascinating. I was riveted. I really enjoyed the... Like you said, it's a vast book. It starts out at the beginning of the universe and takes us up until probably when you had to turn in the manuscript. So it's pretty
right.
Remarkable. And
still
I was
adding stuff in there even as it was going to press.
I can imagine, because there was a section at the end about government spying, and you were almost a soothsayer in that one, because you didn't have the Edward Snowden material yet, but you pretty much nailed it there too. So
yeah. Well, this has been known for a good number of years to the people who are actually paying attention and not blindsided by the corporate mass media. All Edward Snowden did was simply confirm what a lot of people already knew.
Exactly. Just to sort of, I have various notes here, but I almost wanted this to be kind of a companion to the book instead of something where we're going to give away the book, because we want folks to go pick this up because it's amazing. I was really interested and just blown away by,
We're not talking about one or two here. We're talking about a myriad of really weird astronomical mysteries that still exist despite how science is so, you know, quote-unquote sure about everything that's going on out there in space. I was really amazed by that as I was reading the book, because you just get hit one after another after another. It's like, where did the moon come from? How did the moon even get formed? And, you know, why is the Earth so perfectly in place here and there and all this? It's like unbelievable stuff that, you know, when you get down brass tacks, these scientists who poo-poo everything paranormal and mysterious, they really don't know the answers to a lot of these questions either.
No, they really don't. In fact, there is a lot of cover-up going on, and a lot of people don't want to admit that to themselves or whatever. But let me give you some of the for instances. There are just, too many NASA photographs taken of the moon or Mars that show obvious signs of manipulation and of cover-up. I mean, there's little fuzzed-out places. You know, anyone who knows anything should know that we have satellites now with such resolution that they can read the label of a beer can that you're holding in your hand standing in your yard in a suburb of Los Angeles, California. Okay? And yet they give us these pictures of the moon and Mars, and some portions of them look fairly sharp, and then there's little areas where it's just obviously been painted or blurred over or pixelated out. Well, what are they hiding? I'll give you a couple of other examples. The idea that so many people have been talking about the fact that a 10th planet or Planet X or Nibiru, whatever you want to call it,
right,
some heavenly body is approaching our solar system. And actually, this could explain the weather and climate changes that we're now seeing. Of course, Al Gore and others have blamed it on our SUVs and our automobiles, but there is a equal number of scientists who are not on the payroll who say, no, that's not right. This is just normal cyclic activity here on the Earth. And the key point is, the proof is that whatever is causing the climate change, and there is climate change on the Earth. There are harsher climates and colder winters and hotter summers and more tsunamis and major earthquakes and volcanic eruptions, all kinds of things going on. But it's not just the Earth. The polar ice caps on Mars are receding, means they're melting, so it's heating up there. There's ice melting on the moons of Jupiter. The outer planets are becoming more luminescent, which means basically they're kind of heating up. So whatever is happening, it's impacting our entire solar system, not just the Earth. So sorry, Al Gore, but we don't really need all those carbon tax credits because it's not just the Earth, it's the entire solar system. And obviously that's not impacted by our driving our cars. And then we have story of Planet X and Nibiru. That could certainly explain this climate change. And yet when you go and type in Nibiru for Wikipedia, you get this whole long thing about it all started in 1995 with a Wisconsin woman who said she was contacted by aliens, and tells this whole story and said it's going to blow up the world in 2012, which obviously didn't happen. And they just generally make light of the whole subject. And yet, in my book, Our Occulted History, you'll find that there's been serious scientific study of a possible 10th planet since 1843. And there has been mainstream media stories. In fact, just as recently as about a year ago, they said they had reason to believe there was another planet approaching our solar system out beyond the Kuiper Belt. Asteroid belt, which is even out past Pluto.
Yeah.
And so, you know, wait a minute. This is kind of a cover-up. Another thing I mentioned is, if you go to Google and type in Bosnian pyramid, they've discovered what they say is the largest pyramid in the world. It's even larger than the Great Pyramid in Egypt, in Bosnia, over in Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. And if you'll go to Wikipedia again, type in Bosnia pyramid, you'll find a little short page article quoting a select scientist saying, oh no, there's nothing there, it's just a hill. And yet, I'm sorry, I have talked with people who've been there and seen the photographs, videos, of the tunnels and the rooms inside this so-called natural hill. In fact, one of my best friends just got back from traveling to the Bosnian Pyramid, and she was down in the tunnels and into the chambers within this pyramid, which they still claim is just a natural hill. So there's just tremendous cover-up going on. And Tim, as you recall from reading the book, when I talk about all of the anomalous material that has disappeared into the Smithsonian Institution, going back to the bones of giant beings, okay? And when I say giant, I'm not talking about 8 and 10 foot tall people, because we have those today occasionally. But I'm talking about 15, 18 feet high, huge things. Who are these people? Where'd they come from? And the bones are still here. And they've been discovered all around the world, even in Middle America, the Indian mounds in the Mississippi Valley, you know. So there's just so much going on that we are not being told about.
Right. That's the amazing part. It's like not just out in the universe, but it's also our past, our story, our history as a race, as a human race. You know, it's right. Like what? It's maddening in a way, you know, and over the course of the book, you know, you see the recurring sort of pattern of the winners writing history and destroying all this information about their fallen foes, you know, burning libraries. Yeah. It's stunning, you know.
Oh, I'd give anything if really. I'd give anything if I could go back and read, translated into English, of course. Yeah. But read some of the books that were destroyed when the huge library at Alexandria was burned and destroyed. I mean, so much of our ancient history has been just burned up or destroyed in wars or natural disasters. It's amazing.
Why do you think why does this happen? I guess is the question. Why? I mean, don't they have any respect for their own past as a species?
Well, apparently not. You may recall before our invasion of Afghanistan in 2001, everybody was upset because the Taliban was destroying
all those big statues,
statues and all kinds of stuff. Religion has played a huge part in all of that. You know, any time they showed up, that's like when the Spanish came and conquered Central America, and they said, well, these are heathens and they're all of the devil. So they went in and destroyed so much of the Mayan civilization. And you see that all over the place, but I'm here to tell you, I think that although a lot of that, and of course the Christians, you know, they need to take credit for some of that too. There was so much at the time that Napoleon conquered England, Egypt. The Christians went in the Great Pyramid and said they found devices in there, mechanical things. But they said these are not Christians, so therefore they're of the devil. So they hauled everything out of the Great Pyramid and destroyed it. Well, this is just unconscionable and stupid on top of that.
Right.
But I'm here to tell you, Tim, I think that even though that's all been done in the name of religion, all the religions, I think there was an impetus coming from these bloodlines, people who were trying to control everything, and I think that they encouraged this so that they can keep us barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen, as they say,
yeah,
for the whole human race, you know. And I guess the bottom line is that how can we ever know our future and where we're going if we don't have an accurate history of where we've been?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and you touched on another part of that, the point here that I was going to make about this sort of idea of the winners writing history, and you really hit the nail on the head when you said that it was stupid, because in the book, you point out instances like the little models of the plane that they built, that they rebuilt, and could fly, and stories of possible immunization. And then we hear about the Antikythera mechanism that was like an ancient computer, and it's just maddening to think like where we would be as a species if we didn't keep shooting ourselves in the foot. Because why do we keep having to rediscover these things?
If they didn't keep all of this technology away from us,
right?
You know? Well, if you want the proof of conspiracy, and not only proof of that there is such a thing as It's a vast conspiracy, but the proof of probably the greatest conspiracy taking place today is simply this. We know, and you know, and I know you agree with me, and I think everyone listening would agree with me, that we have the technology right off the shelf available today to provide food, clothing, shelter, and basic health care to every single living human being on this planet. We can do it. But, and yet, at the same time, while you're even listening to my voice, in the back of your mind, you know that there are literally thousands, if not millions, of children literally starving to death on the planet right now. Now, wait a minute. I don't want that. You don't want that. I doubt any of your listeners want that. So why is it that way? Well, once you get past some of the facile rationale, such as, well, it's politics and it's money and it's blah, blah. It's that way because somewhere, someone wants it that way. If nobody wanted it that way, it wouldn't be that way, right?
Yeah.
So we have the capacity for making the earth a virtual living paradise for every single person. And yet, look at us. Look at America. Look at the United States. We are still one of the richest countries in the world, in mineral resources, in basic materials, and with a reasonably educated workforce that wants to work, okay? So why are we in such economic straits? Why are we $16 trillion in debt? And that's just what the government admits to. Other economists have looked at hidden charges and unreported charges and debts, and actually we're probably up to $30-40 trillion in debt, more than our entire gross national product put together for a number of years. Why is it that way? Why? How'd we get like that? Well, again, because somebody somewhere wants it that way. And to me, that is the proof of conspiracy.
It's a sad state of affairs we're in right now, that's for sure. And I look back on the 8 years we've been talking, and it seems like every year.
Worse.
Yeah.
It's incredible. We were talking about this same thing 8 years ago.
Right.
And it's just gotten worse. And it's like, wait a minute. And we've had two presidential elections since then, and we've had, four congressional elections. And yet, here's what I don't understand, Tim. Everyone I talk to, I don't know of anybody who is perfectly happy and satisfied with the way the country's going. Okay? Nobody.
Yeah.
And yet, they keep reelecting the same jerks that go back to Congress, you know? And then wonder why nothing changes. I think it was Albert Einstein who said, you know, the very definition of insanity and stupidity is to repeat the same experiment over and over again and expect a different result. And you keep electing the same people to Congress, you're going to get the same policies that have got us in the position we're in today.
Yeah, it's
I don't get it. I just don't get it.
No, I don't get it either. And it beyond just the machinations of the powers that be, it's like things are getting worse here on the planet. You know, it's like I said, in the 8 years since we've talked, what do we've had? I think we talked right after Katrina, and then we had the Gulf, the oil spill in the Gulf, right. And then Fukushima. It's like, man, we're breaking this thing. We're not doing a good job taking care
of
it.
Well, and you mentioned Fukushima, and you mentioned the Gulf. You know, all that's still going. There's still oil dumping into the Gulf. They're still spraying Corexit down there. In fact, you know, the Gulf fishermen will tell you, don't eat anything out of the Gulf. And now Fukushima, it's still spewing radiation. They just had another plume go off just the other day. And they're expecting already this about right now, about today, some of that radiation is going to be hitting the West Coast. I mean, you know, these are environmental absolute disasters. And although they were reported at the time they began, you don't hear anything about them much in the media now.
No.
But it's still ongoing.
If you do, it's like the fifth story of the nightly news. They're kind of like, oh, yeah, there's still problems going on over there, but, you know. People
well,
just,
you see, you'll see an occasional story on the back pages of the newspaper, but I'm not even sure you get anything on the broadcast media. You know, it's just that's to them, it's old news. And so a lot of people forget that, you know, we're being irradiated.
That's what they want. They want us to not know that.
Exactly.
Now, to sort of looking at, again, the occulted history of our species here, what I was interested in, and I didn't notice this in the book, so I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about this. You talked about the Piri Reis map, and it's pretty well known, I think, amongst those of us who are, you know, a part of the esoteric, that America was known about, that North America was known about by at least the powers that be for quite some time. Why did it take so long for them to get to America and quote-unquote discover it, as the history books tell us?
Yeah, well, you know, you're absolutely right. In fact, the old Knights Templars, which go back to the 10th, 11th century, they had a huge sailing fleet and headquartered at La Rochelle, France. And they actually traveled and traversed the entire world. There was an ancient ruins of a port on the Pacific side of South America in what is now Chile.
Yeah.
That had Templar symbols and logos all over it. And there's even a statue up in, I want to say New Hampshire, I believe, that is a Templar statue. So obviously they had reached North America. The Vikings, Leif Erikson, of course, reached North America.
Yeah.
The educated people at the time knew there was something here. The Piri Reis maps show that. In fact, the Piri Reis maps to me are pretty incredible. He was a 15th century Turkish admiral, and he drew up these very detailed maps showing accurately the tributaries of the Amazon River, which was not known to us until the geophysical year of 1958, when they did the flyovers and photographed the Amazon River. He also showed Antarctica and accurately drew the shoreline of the continent of Antarctica, which today is buried under hundreds of feet of ice. And it was only with the advent of a ground-penetrating radar that they were able to determine the exact configuration of the Antarctic coast, and yet it matches up perfectly with Piri Reis's map. Well, how could he have known that? Well, he wrote himself that he used ancient maps from Greece, from ancient Greece, and they themselves had based these maps on even earlier maps, earlier than the Greek culture. And what really gets me is that these maps are very detailed and accurate until they get to the edges of the map, in which case sometimes the shorelines become a little elongated and a little distorted.
Yeah.
Well, that, of course, has to do with the curvature of the Earth and the fact that the higher up you get, the more distorted the ends become. But what that tells me is that these ancient maps were based on possibly aerial photographs. So, but wait a minute, you know, supposedly there was no heavier there in an air flight in human history until the Wright brothers flew in 1906. So, well, wait a minute, where did they get aerial photographs? And, of course, that comes back to the fact that almost every ancient culture in the world, from the Aborigines of Australia to the Dogon tribe of Africa to the North American natives, all over the world, Chinese, the ancient Egyptians, and of course, the world's first known great civilization, which was in Sumer in Mesopotamia, and they all claim that the gods came from the sky and were flying around and landed and taught them language, law, agriculture, you know, the whole thing. And so I think that this is what has given rise to the increasingly popular idea of ancient astronauts. And I think the evidence for that idea that extraterrestrials visited the Earth in our distant historical past is just more than compelling, you know. I think it's just very obvious that that's exactly what happened, and particularly when all the ancient tribes try to tell us that's what happened.
Exactly. But to circle back a little bit here on this question, why do you, and I know it's speculative, but why do you think they kept the secret of America secret for so long and then, you know, played it out almost like a reality show where they were say, oh, we found this whole new world over here when they knew all along. Like, why do you think they did it that way?
Well, I think basically, and I think it's the same reason that they're not telling us today about our true history and about the very things we've been talking about, which is knowledge is power.
Hmm.
And if you keep people ignorant, then you can maintain power over them. If they wise up, if they realize, for example, one of the reasons I think they wanted to not tell the common folk, if you will,
yeah,
about the existence of North America, South, the Americas, was that they would get out from under their control. The whole history of Western civilization is one of westward movement. As we all know, we even taught in school that it all began in the Fertile Crescent between the Tigris, Euphrates rivers, which is in what is now Iraq, the one place on the world that we can't just freely travel to. And then the population, the human population, spread northward through the Caucasus Mountains into southern Russia and then into eastern Europe and then to western Europe and then to the British Isles. And then it also moves southward to Palestine and Egypt and then Greece, Rome, western Europe, the British Isles. And then the western nations, France and Spain and England, they sent the colonists over and they began to colonize the east coast of North America. And then, of course, in the 19th century, the population just kept moving west and covered up the entire North American continent. So why was everybody unhappy? Why didn't they just stay home? Didn't nobody like where it was, where they were living? Well, historians really make no big secret about it. This huge westward movement was because people were trying to escape religious and political tyranny.
Hmm.
So they just move. Well, you know, the would-be controllers, they want to control everybody. So they don't want anybody moving. So for hundreds of years, they kept telling them the world was flat and you can't go westward or you'll fall off the edge of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
keeps them home and under thumb.
That makes sense. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's see, you know, and to turn that on its head a little bit, I've used this sort of argument with skeptics in the past where, you know, they refuse to believe the idea that what we're talking about, that this whole thing was kept secret. So they say, you know, oh, well, they didn't discover America till whenever. And it's like, well, then how can you say, if human history went so long and then they found out there was this entire continent right next to, you know, right next to Europe and the Middle East, they never knew about it, then how can you say that aliens don't exist? How can you say we haven't discovered, you know, there's massive things we haven't discovered yet because we can see it from the mainstream version of history?
Well, we're seeing the same thing now that I mentioned earlier, which is you're seeing these NASA photographs of the moon, Mars, some of these other planets, and they're airbrushing them, and they're painting out stuff, and they're covering stuff up because they still want to keep us contained and under their control.
Yeah.
And of course, the main method of control has shifted. In the distant past, it was always religion. You know, God told me that I'm to be the priest and I'm going to tell you what God wants you to do and you better do it or you'd be punished by God. Okay. And then, but with the advent of the printing press, and everyone got to read the Bible. Tim, are you aware that for several hundred years there after the invention of the printing press, it was a crime to print the Bible?
No, okay? I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Universal Roman Church said, that's blasphemous and that's a sin and that's, so we're gonna make that illegal. And so one of the first books that was banned and was only passed around surreptitiously, you know, was the Bible. Hey buddy, want a Bible? You know, but then after a while it was out so much that they just couldn't keep it secret anymore. And then, but you know, it was all the way up into the late 1960s, maybe even in the 70s, that the Catholic Church finally stopped doing all the services in Latin. And they did that so that only the priesthood, only the educated, only the people who knew Latin could understand what they were saying. And then, of course, this is why you had the priesthood to tell everybody, well, this is what it all means, this is what it says. And then after the Bible came along and after Martin Luther tacked his thesis on the door and everything, then people began to realize that everything that the church was telling them was not necessarily what was in the Bible. So the whole control through religion began to wane, and it's still waning even today. So starting in the 1700s, I suppose, early 1700s, we saw the control mechanism shift from religion to finances. Okay, and it's the golden rule: whoever has the gold makes the rules.
That's right.
And we definitely see that going on today, because today, you know, we do not have slavery per se as it was known, say, back in the 1700s, early 1800s, where people were sold and traded like chattel. But today we have financial servitude. You have people, and it's called wage slaves. And I think we all understand this, because unless you're independently wealthy, you have to work for a living, you get your paycheck, the government automatically takes a good chunk of it, and then whatever you get, you have to spend the rest on paying off your mortgage and your bank cards and your loans, and, you know, and usually there's little or nothing left. And so you cannot just freely move around when you want to. You can't just go move to another state or another part of the country if you want to.
Yeah.
You can't just go travel around the world, you know, because you're stuck trying to meet those monthly payments, those bills. And isn't it interesting how the post office will sometimes mess up your mail and you'll get something that's kind of broken into, or it's been kind of trashed out, but those bills just seem to come in like clockwork, and nothing ever seems to happen to them.
Yeah, they leave the bills alone. That's true.
Yeah,
I never thought of that. Well, it's interesting. You know, I was thinking about it, and you kind of mentioned it in the book that, you know, there was sort of a period there where the human race, we're going to go on the premise that the Sumerian epic is factually 100%, you know, it's watertight right now, just for the sake of argument here. And you
right.
make sort
and,
of...
and of course that's what's actually been happening. There's really not that much argument over the translation of these ancient Sumerian tablets. In fact, if you want to read the story of the Enki, Enlil, these, their Anunnaki gods, and the stories, the alliteration, narratives of, our beginnings and on like that, you can find it in the Encyclopedia Britannica. The problem is, it's not under any factual thing. You only find it under Sumerian mythology.
Right.
So the only thing that's really changed in recent years is that there's a growing number of scholars, beginning with, Zachariah Sitchin, but now including many, many more, who simply say that, hey, maybe these ancient Sumerians, when they were telling us about these Anunnaki, which translates those who came from the heavens and landed on the earth, and when they tell about them colonizing and building a civilization and flying through the air and having weapons that could destroy whole cities with a single blast and all like that, maybe they weren't just making up things, mythological characters and events. Maybe they were actually telling us what they knew to be true.
Yeah, exactly. So jumping from there, it's interesting that you sort of mentioned this kind of like a point in the history books here, or the history that we're sort of unfolding in the course of the book and the conversation here, that, you know, at some point the Sumerians or the ETs, they leave, they're gone, and then the human race becomes like abandoned. It develops this sort of like abandonment complex, and starts to resemble a cargo cult. I thought that was interesting, because that could happen again if we ever recognize the Sumerian epic as the true history of the human race. I can imagine, and forget about modern aliens and modern UFOs. If they were just like, hey, listen, we realize that this is how it all happened, guys. I think that would have a tremendously weird effect on the human race, because then we would become like this abandoned child mentality for everybody because, you know, our gods left us.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and along that line, I think that since way back there, they created kingship, okay, and the priesthoods. Because, you know, if you're trying to run the Planet of the Apes and you come from somewhere else, you're Charlton Heston, you're not an ape, you don't want to just be another ape, you want to run the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
And yet, what are the odds that you can physically control 7 billion apes? You know, you just can't do it. So how would you try to control the Planet of the Apes? Well, you would stay in the background, you'd stay hidden, and you'd find some of the more intelligent apes, and you'd recruit them as your go-betweens, your liaison, and then you would pass the orders to them. They would turn, would get the ape herd moving in the direction they wanted, and they would say that God told them to do that, you know?
Right.
And if Charlton Heston or the Anunnaki go leave the Earth and they leave the planet and go somewhere else, well, then the priesthood, are they want to be just another ape? No, they're going to continue the priesthood. And they, even though the gods are no longer around, no longer physical, they can say, yeah, but they're still there. This is when they shifted to the monotheistic God. God is, you know, way up in heaven somewhere up in the clouds, and you can't see him, but he can see you, and he's running everything. But by the way, I represent him, so give me the tithes and the money. You know, I find it quite telling that Jesus the Christ, who is also called the Prince of Peace, you know, who preached basically love and conciliation, the one time he got really physically violent was what? Against the money changers, against the bankers. And were they in their banks? No, they were in the temple. So you saw that, you see way back there this blending of church and state and the finance system with the religious system. And that goes on today too. Let me quickly point out that I'm not arguing against spirituality. I know a lot of people are not particularly religious, but they are very spiritual, if you can understand the distinction.
Absolutely, yeah. That's an interesting point, because you mentioned Jesus a couple times in the book, but you didn't really delve much into all the various theories surrounding him. There have been whole books written about that. But,
You
know, what's your take on
that? That's another whole topic.
Yeah. well, you know, what's your take on that? Because there's theories.
Well, number one, I don't feel like it's proper to go try to mess with somebody's religious beliefs.
Absolutely.
We're supposed to have freedom of religion in this country. If you want to worship a tree, or you want to worship Jesus, or you want to worship whatever, I think that's your right to do so. But that right to worship however you want to, I think, ends if it starts including, let's kill everybody that doesn't believe the way I believe.
Okay,
so it's a little philosophy called freedom. You know, gee, what a concept. We seem to have lost track of that one. But as far as what I would think about, I feel like it's up to each individual. The only thing I would encourage is, instead of just picking up what your parents taught you or what the church that you grew up in taught you, start thinking for yourself. Read everything. Read a wide variety of things. Study the other religions. Study spirituality. And then it's going to be up to the individual to just determine, where the parameters are of their belief.
Okay. Now, another sort of area that I want to explore with you here is the first part of the book is the origins, and then the latter part of the book is sort of the now. And you didn't really touch on it in the now part of the book, but obviously in this whole overarching theory here or story, you got the aliens in the ancient times, but now we've got the aliens potentially coming back right now, and we have the modern day UFO phenomenon. And if the powers that be don't want us to know about our ancient alien past, then they certainly can't be happy that the aliens are coming back, unless they're in cahoots with them, right?
Right. Well, first, since you were assuming, for the sake of argument, that these Anunnaki were real people.
Right.
And that they represented non-humans.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think the big question comes about is that, well, okay, if these ancient astronauts, if these Anunnaki gods were on the Earth physically, thousands of years ago, there's only one or two possibilities. Either at some point they all left, or some of them are still around, right?
Yeah.
So how do we determine the answer to that? Well, I submit that it's pretty easy, actually, because to learn the answer, all you have to do is study what is known of human history. Now, of course, what we are taught in school and what most people are still believing is that the human history is just one of slow evolutionary growth, starting with cavemen and then hunter-gatherers and then, you know, communities and city-states and then empires and nations. Okay, and under that thing, then, you know, there's no big deal. There's nobody but us. But that's not really what history teaches, does it? You've got the flying dragons of the Chinese. You've got the flying boats of the Egyptians. You've got the flying shields of the Romans. And you've got recounts from the Middle Ages. You've got the UFO phenomena of today, the abduction experiences, the cattle mutilations, the crop circles. Obviously, somebody is here. Okay? Well, now if they're here, then that, of course, begs the question. Then where are they? Who are they? And what do they want?
Right.
Well, okay. So now we just shift gears and we start thinking about the concept of the New World Order, which, of course, was mentioned by Adolf Hitler when he said he was going to bring a new order, New World Order, and was mentioned by Ronald Reagan, and was mentioned by George Herbert Walker Bush, that we're going to bring in a New World Order. And so you've got these individuals, you've got a small clique of people that are trying to run the world. And this is not just conspiracy theory. In 2011, there was a study in Switzerland called the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology, and they did a study of 43,000 multinational corporations, and they found that they were essentially controlled by just a little over 1,000 companies, private companies with interlocking ownerships, and these 1,300 companies were in turn controlled by about 20 multinational banks, and collectively they control more than 60% of all global revenues. Now that is an incredible concentration of power. So there is really no question about the fact that a small clique of someone is trying to control the entire world through the economic system. And so the question is, do they connect to these Anunnaki gods? And I believe they do. For one example, this kind of blew me away when I found that the Rothschild banking dynasty, which was so powerful beginning in the 1700s, 1800s, 1900s, and still wield considerable power today, they claim that they are the descendants of Nimrod, the ancient Sumerian god king. So they're very much aware of this connection, and they certainly believe in it. And so it doesn't really matter whether we as individuals want to believe in any of this or not. The point is, they do.
Right, right. And you wonder if the current UFO cover-up is in turn really more of a cover-up of the past, of the distant past, you know, where they don't want us putting the pieces together on all this.
Yeah. And not only that, but then when you stop and figure, okay, these people have had, inordinate control over world affairs for several centuries now, and possibly even more going back into the past, because as you'll read in our cultured history, those bloodlines trace back to the royalty of England, France, Germany, and goes all the way back into the control of the Roman Empire, and then goes all the way back. But just recently, say in the 20th century, what's their track record for being in control of the planet? It's not very good. Two world wars,
yeah.
Huge depressions, you know, and lots of suffering, lots of death. of the humans. Okay, so it's enough that I think that once you study this subject in all seriousness, it's time to ask, are they even us?
That's one of the big takeaways from the book. Are they even us being humans? Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the concept put forward by Rich Dolan that there's sort of this breakaway civilization. These kind of may go hand in hand, where it's like maybe they may still be humans, but they've elevated themselves or put themselves on such a pedestal that they no longer see themselves as average people. I think that's kind of clear.
Right. Well, I'm very familiar with Rich's idea of the breakaway civilization, and basically, I think you should call it the third way. Okay.
Yeah.
And we certainly saw this during the Cold War, because we had the socialist East versus the capitalist West, with certain areas where they were overlapping. For example, in the space program, you had the old Soviet Union. Was producing huge heavy lift rockets that could carry huge payloads up into space. That's why they were first with putting a woman in space, a man in space, an orbiting satellite, et cetera, et cetera. And the United States, on the other hand, our space program was more concerned with the electronics and the guidance systems, et cetera, et cetera, okay? And that was the big competitive push, and it seemed like there were two separate space programs, and yet, if you study it closely, you'll find that a lot of the Nazi scientists working on our space program were not particularly monitored, and they were in touch with their counterparts over in Russia. And so at that level, and by the people who were allowing these Nazis to come to the United States and profit from their knowledge and their technology, I think this is where there was a third space program that combined the heavy lift capabilities of the Soviets with the guidance systems of the West, and they were pushing on ahead while Russia and the United States were still struggling, trying to keep up with each other. And I think that's what Rich Dolan and others have called this breakaway civilization.
Right.
And if there was nothing else on the record, Tim, I would wholeheartedly jump on that and say, yeah, that's gotta be the answer. But again, when you consider the cattle mutilation phenomena, the crop circles, and the UFO things, you know, and the fact that they predate flight. I mean, I live just about 8 miles from Aurora, Texas, where they said they had a spaceship crash and buried the pilot in the Aurora Cemetery, and this was in 1897, 6 years before the Wright brothers flew. Hmm. So considering all that, I think, yeah, there's a breakaway civilization, but it's not really breakaway. It's an outside civilization that's been with us since time immemorial.
You just wonder what's going to happen if they ever want to let us know they're here.
That's right. Well, that's everybody, you know, in the UFO community keeps talking about disclosure. You know, when are they going to disclose the truth of all this? And I'm here to tell you, I don't think the government will ever voluntarily tell us that, you know, you're not going to see President Obama come on national television and say, okay, folks, we have reason to believe that there's life outside the earth and we're in contact with them, but don't panic. Everything's cool. You know, no, that ain't going to happen. But like you said, Tim, it's going to be up to them. All they have to do is appear before some major U.S. cities or any cities around the world and then hang there long enough for the news crews to get out and start taking videotape of them, and the game's up, right?
Right.
But that hasn't happened yet. And I don't think it's going to happen, although I think the time is fast approaching that we may see something like that happen, because I think that these other races have an understanding, if you will, almost a law akin to the Star Trek idea, of their ultimate law, which is you do not overtly interfere with the natural evolution of a species.
Right.
You know, they call it the prime directive. But yet, yet these folks, so while they are prescribed from just directly interfering with us, I think there have been attempts to let themselves be seen, to have so many people have so many experiences that slowly in the collective consciousness we are becoming aware that we're not alone in the universe.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you wonder if the end game on their end is to control the planet. Things are working pretty well for them right now. They don't see that. They probably don't want to upset the apple cart because their plans are coming together pretty well. So
that's true, but not to the perfection that they would like.
Right, right.
You know, there's still a lot of opposition to what's going on.
Hey, this conversation between you and me right now, the fact that we can have it is evidence that the game's not up yet.
That's true, and that's why it's incumbent upon all of us to start opening our minds and our ears and our eyes and start thinking for ourselves, because they definitely have control over the mass media. There are now, you know, I was very concerned about 10, 12 years ago that most of the major media in this country had come under the control of about 20 major corporations with interlocking ownership and directorship. Well, today it's down to five, okay? Five multinational corporations basically control everything we see and hear. And I'm not just talking about news. I'm talking about books, magazines, music, films, movies, satellite, cable, publishing, you know, you name it, book clubs. It's all under very tight control. And this is why that we seem to be in such disarray as a culture, because there's such a wide gap between people who just watch TV for their information and people who, like you, who actually read and study the various sources of information.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?